prepare for overreaction on my mark.
It's that time of the week where overreactions are welcome.
They say Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time, but he never fought Cassius Clay. What was he afraid of? Boom! Hot take!
It's Cash 'em.
That is so good, but that's exactly right.
Or Trash 'em.
This is your hot take.
Seems like an overreaction.
With a killer bees.
Give us a hot spoonful of your opinion.
All right, back on the killer bees as we normally do this time at this day at 2 o'clock on a Tuesday. We got the Cash or Trash It world, and we've got lots to get into, as always. And then we have a vote amongst the three of us to figure out, do we cash it, do we trash it, and what's our take? So with that being said, I want to start with the man, the myth, the legend, the full-timer, Jeremy Branham, and say...
Nice, Phil!
Jeremy, what do you got top of your list? What's on your mind for the first one this week?
Did you tell him I was late?
No.
Oh!
I don't sell
I
you
out outed
like
myself?
That.
Man!
I don't do any of that.
You snitched on yourself.
I snitched on my...
You went full Mike Fires on your own team.
Snitches get busy.
Easy!
Oh. Or...
I've never heard that phrase.
Yeah, well, you know.
Is that a real
Mike
thing?
Mike Fires believed it.
Is that a
he
phrase?
He lives it every day.
Is that a thing, or is that just something you created?
He just uses it on the internet.
Cash it or trash it, right?
That's what we're doing.
Yeah. My first cash it or trash it. The Packers will win the Aaron Rodgers trade. The latest that we've seen on the return for what it would take for Aaron Rodgers, apparently good progress has been made. Still not going to be a first rounder.
This year.
But what we've heard is a 2023 second round pick and a 2024 second round pick that has conditions, depending on Aaron Rodgers' performance, that could turn into a first round pick. Look, I think that the Aaron Rodgers addition for the Jets makes them a Super Bowl contender. I don't think it makes them a Super Bowl champion. I think that they fall short. I think Aaron Rodgers gives them one solid year, but then it's done, doesn't send the parade to New York, anything like that. Meanwhile, the Packers, look, I'm a little higher on Jordan Love than you are, not to say that they're going to be a playoff team in the NFC, but they get to wash their hands of all the drama. They miss out on 1 year of Aaron Rodgers where they didn't make the playoffs this past year with Aaron Rodgers anyways. They add some two really good picks, premium picks in the next couple of years. The Green Bay Packers, when it's all said and done, win the Aaron Rodgers trade.
I'll cash this because of the fact.
Homer.
Because no, not at all. Because I'm so sick and tired of the drama, for one. And I think that when you heard GM Brian Gutekunst come out yesterday and speak on exactly what had gone down, and the fact that the wounded warrior that is Princess Aaron Rodgers got, you know, has all these different things because he has the platform and the outlet on the Pat McAfee show, but he doesn't seem to tell all the truth when the Packers have said that they reached out multiple times to try and talk to him to figure out a lay of the land and what he was planning on doing and what his thought process was, and he didn't return phone calls. But then he was butthurt and that they weren't including him, and because they were talking to teams about potential trades, that, you know, he decided he knew that they were going in a different direction. I mean, you also came out in training camp a year ago and said that you wanted to finish your career in Green Bay. So time to move on, Princess, and pull up your big boy pants. And from the Jets' perspective, it's all on the table. They have so much to lose if they don't get this deal done. And in terms of who carries any kind of clout in these discussions, I think Green Bay does. They don't have to do anything. And the Jets are left holding the bag. Yeah, they'd have to pay some money, but that might help them get to the Caleb Williams sweepstakes if Jordan Love ain't the guy. I think that they get what they want to, as long and they'll end up with a first and a second in this deal some way, somehow. And if they do that, then they absolutely win the trade.
Joe George?
Yeah, I'm going to cash that.
Wow, I didn't expect that.
Because that franchise will just be better off without him. It doesn't matter what they get in return.
I have great
takes. It's a win.
Great takes.
Well, you saw the Elijah Moore trade that the Jets made, so now they have, what, back-to-back second-rounders? I think it's 41 and 42, or 42 and 43 now in this upcoming draft. So, like, if I'm the Packers, I want both of them, personally.
See, I think that they're going to do the one next year with the contingencies, with a chance that even though it would be a late first, that they're still trying to...
Yeah, you got to put heavy contingencies. But the problem is I don't know how you put those contingencies in place, because what do you want the contingency to be? That if he plays in 2024...
From
what I read, he has to play 2 years there, and he has to get them this year to a home playoff game.
So you're talking about a 2025 first-round pick.
No, I think it's going to be – think ultimately it's going to be 23 and 24.
If he gets them to the playoffs this year and they have home field advantage in any one round –
And he has to play next year?
But if I'm the Packers,
he's playing next year.
I don't think that conveys.
Yeah, see, if I'm the Jets, you have to protect yourself that he's only going to play for 1 year for you.
That would do it, though. Because if he has to play next year, that protects
him. But I'm saying you want him to play for you for more than 1 year.
Sure.
But so like that's why I think they could go into 2025 and do this deal on draft day.
But what they get in return for the Packers isn't going to influence Aaron Rodgers' decision at all.
See, I also don't think
it protects you. Like, I'm not giving up a first rounder in 2024
but
if Aaron Rodgers quits.
It does protect them because they only get the Packers
only
get the
first instead of second. But
I see your point because that would.
I just like I don't want like if I'm the Jets, I can't be Brett Favre 2.0 that like
right.
Aaron Rodgers is going to demand a trade again. And that's why you have to protect yourself at least a little bit if you can. But who knows?
He wouldn't have played a second season yet in the 2024 draft,
yeah.
Which is Joe's point.
I don't think, by the way, that this trade goes down until after June 1st.
Maybe announce it, but not.
It covers the Packers' ass because the dead cap right now is over $40 million. But if they wait till after June 1st, it's $15 million.
But you can announce it with a June 1st designation.
Right, but I'm just saying from a Green Bay perspective to try and still add to the roster, I think that's what they're thinking as well.
You're right. But they can make it tomorrow and say this is going to be a trade that happens on June 1st. You just leak it through the media. It's not official until it's official.
Right.
Did I go first?
No, Joel went first.
Jeremy
did go first.
Yeah, I set him up
to go first. I know, I'm just so used to you going
first. Why do you think it was backwards, Jeremy?
Because I was late.
Okay, and which I didn't want to say, but now that you're going to call it out again.
Why? What's yours?
Okay, the first one to me is that I don't believe the Los Angeles Lakers are going to make the playoffs. And not only do I not believe that the Los Angeles Lakers are going to make the playoffs, people are losing their mind because Dallas right now is the game out of the play-in. I think Dallas will not only play in, but I think Dallas has a better chance of getting out of the play-in games by the time the season ends in the regular season. But I think the Lakers and all this drama and all this LeBron about himself after he broke the record, I think it's going to cost them dearly. And I don't think they make the actual playoffs. I don't even think they make the play-in.
He went to the LeBron James of foot doctors.
I heard that.
I love that soundbite so much.
So
now,
weird.
Does play-in matter?
I said that I don't think he's going to make the playoffs, period, including the play-in.
Okay. So it's because they have a half-game lead the Luka Dallas Mavericks.
And I think Dallas makes it and L.A. doesn't.
I'm going to trash this. I think that they make the play-in, but I think that they fall short of the playoffs. I don't think that they're going to, especially because I think they're going to be either a 9-seed or a 10-seed, which means it requires two wins to get into the actual playoff. So I kind of halfway trash this. I think they get into the play-in, but fall short of the playoff.
I'm going to trash as well. I think that they get the 8th seed.
The 8th seed?
They're only a half game. They're a game behind the Pelicans, who are awful.
Right. But
they've won 5 in a row.
The Lakers
are red hot.
Yeah.
But they were the number 2 seed for like a third of the season and then become a
Pat
disaster.
Beverly's out there telling LeBron he's too small as your Chicago Bulls, Joe.
It was very funny.
Beating the Lakers.
Yeah, I think the Lakers will make the playoffs.
Okay.
All right, what you got for us, George?
ESPN wrote the story today that based on salary and endorsements, Shohei Ohtani, I guess Forbes wrote it actually. Shohei Ohtani will make $65 million this season.
Cash it.
That's still underpaid. That's my take.
Well, it will be in a year or two.
Yeah.
Because I think he's going to be the first major league player to make well over $50 million, and we've discussed this. I know Jeremy has a lot of man love next to Ben Verlander.
He's my favorite non-Astro. There's no doubt he's my favorite non-Astro.
Yeah, so that projection is $35 million in endorsements and jersey sales.
Yeah, I was reading that today.
I read it as well. The big surprise to me is why is it taking this long? I mean, the fact that last year they said he made about, $6 million in endorsements?
I think his first year was like 6. Last year was like 15, and now it's up to whatever, 30, 35.
They're thinking it's been like 35.
With the international appeal that he has, he should be blowing it out of the water with
him. He might make $100 million in 2024.
I'll cash this. With endorsements, I think he'll be over a $100 million man next year. I agree with you that he's underpaid this year. I think he's a $70 million baseball player before you even look at endorsements. He's a $35 million a year pitcher. He's a $35 million a year hitter. He's the same dude. He's worth $70 million a year.
So let me ask you guys this. If you think he's a $70 million player, is that the Deshaun Watson contract for baseball owners?
No one will give him $70 million because of the injury risk. Like, his production is worth $70 million, but you're not going to attach $70 million to one individual player.
See, I think a lot of owners would throw up a red flag about giving a player that much, but no other player in the league does what he does.
Deshaun Watson, I think, is closer a comparison to, like, Giancarlo Stanton. Of, like, it's an inflated contract, it's a bad contract. The Miami Marlins had to move off of it right away.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani, because he's a pitcher and a hitter, he's going to make more than everyone else, and, like, it's justified.
Yeah.
I think the day Giancarlo Stanton got paid, we all probably would have thought that's a bad contract. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So that's why I think Watson's more like
especially
that.
Coming from that franchise.
I love Shohei Ohtani. I really do.
I know this.
He's the
Who
most
do you love more, Shohei Ohtani or Will Levis?
Will Levis.
Ooh. Shut up.
Really?
Trash it.
Trash.
I'm a... You just cast your trash.
You're lying.
I am lying. You know, I do have
one's
a big
career, guaranteed
though.
Star.
One eats mayonnaise and bananas full.
Yeah.
And one plays for the Angels.
Oh.
Okay. Any predictions on where Ohtani ends up next year? I have one. This. I'll cash your trash this year.
I think it makes Joe George very happy.
Shohei Ohtani will be a Los Angeles Dodger this time next year.
Trash.
The Dodgers, you're trashing it.
Yep.
The Dodgers have been clearing out this money, right? Like, when was the last time the Dodgers didn't have a huge impact free agent signing? Recent memory? Almost never. Why? Because they're going to be in the Shohei Ohtani business next year. Also, Shohei Ohtani wants to play on the West Coast. He's talked about it in the past. Shohei Ohtani is going to be a Los Angeles Dodger this time next year.
I'm going to go either Cubs or Red Sox.
So you don't believe
Red
in the West
Sox,
Coast?
Red Sox, I believe, have been trying to save money as well, and they let Bogarts walk.
But the Chaim Bloom guy, their general manager, is James Click on steroids. He doesn't believe in huge contracts and attaching money to one dude.
I think the Cubs and the Red Sox have set up groundwork, just like you said, the Dodgers.
They would have to fire Chaim Bloom. Chaim Bloom wouldn't do that. Now, Chaim Bloom
now,
on the hot
ownership
seat,
says you're doing it, and you're doing it.
They would fire Bloom. They would fire Bloom. Now, it's pretty likely that Bloom would get fired if they have a bad year because they hate him in Boston. Okay. They hate Bloom in Boston.
They haven't been relevant in a couple years now. They let Bogarts walk, which pissed everybody off.
I got rid of Mookie for nothing.
Yeah, I think that this makes a lot of sense for either one of those teams.
Now, I think he's stuck in the West Coast.
Seattle spent too much money, though.
I think it's going to be Seattle.
That would suck.
Seattle really knows how to work the TV market deals that we talked about last week because the teams control their international TV rights, and they did it with Ichiro. They could do it again and cash in. But I think their payroll's too high.
I think they find a way. I think it'll be Seattle.
That would suck.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani and Julio Rodriguez.
Yeah, well, you had Shohei Ohtani with Mike Trout, arguably the best player in Major League Baseball in the same division.
But they were stars and scrubs.
You don't even have to be Julio Rodriguez. You can say Shohei Ohtani and Luis Castillo.
I mean, the Mariners were a playoff
team. That one-two punch is incredible.
And now you're adding Shohei?
They're the best team in baseball.
Oh, that would be ridiculous. Don't say that.
Why?
Because I don't want that.
I'm sorry, but it's the truth.
And I want to like Shohei. Well, I wouldn't like Shohei if he went to the Dodgers, though.
I wouldn't either.
If he goes to the Cubs, I can be a Cub guy. I can like Shohei with the Cubs. I love Wrigley. Wrigley's awesome. Wrigleyville's
most
terrific.
Of the time, you're a miserable human being if you're a Cubs fan, but, you know,
well, you're just a miserable human being.
That's not true.
It is.
Are we going to do any more of these?
No.
I think we're out of time.
All right. That was our Cash It or Trash It with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Astros opening day is just two shows away. Thursday night, Astros, White Sox. We've been asking you a question for about a month. Our Astros opening day countdown question of the day: how good is the AL West really going to be? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, 713-780-ESPN. Our Astros opening day countdown question of the day. We've been doing this for about a month. How good is the AL West really going to be? Blankers, we'll start with you. How good is the AL West really going to be in 2023?
Well, I think it's going to be one of the better divisions in baseball. I think that as much as it was kind of like the NFC East of a couple years ago in the NFL, I think everybody crapped on the fact that the Rangers couldn't do wrong, right, and the A's were just super cheap. And the Angels, what'd you call them? The Stars and
Scrubs.
And Scrubs. They had injuries on top of that. They had no pitching. They had three names that you could hang your hat on, but they didn't do anything and they didn't worry anybody. And then along came the Mariners. And the Mariners kind of leapfrogged everybody, and then they started getting in go-for-it mode, and then they showed they weren't afraid to spend and they weren't afraid to make moves, and now they're making more. And you look at what the Rangers have done, though I don't think it's the right way to do it, and I don't think it was money well spent. It put them back in a position where they could be competitive when you have a Jacob deGrom and you have Seager and you have Semien and you've got young players that you can build with and around and two young pitchers on the horizon that are going to be in their rotation very soon, Leiter and the other kid that are going to be big timers as well. The only team that you don't look at and have some form of worry or say they got a legit chance to make the playoffs is the A's. And I think that as you look across baseball, you can probably go to the NL West and think, well, the Dodgers and the Padres right there and the Giants could, and the Diamondbacks are up and coming. That's a chance. And, of course, always the AL East. Red Sox have fallen back, but you still have the Yankees and you have the Blue Jays. And then you've got an up-and-coming young team in Baltimore. You've got teams that you can factor in. I think that if they're one of those teams that could possibly have three playoff teams coming out of the division, you have to say that's one of the best divisions in baseball.
I think there's going to be three playoff teams in the AL West. I think three teams
in the
AL West
and that would qualify them, along with, and I forgot the NL East as well, but when you're talking about the Mets and the Braves and team, you know, teams in that division as well, and the Phillies, I think that might be the best overall division in baseball if they stay healthy. But I think if you say there's going to be three playoff teams out of that division, it's got to be one of the top two or three divisions in baseball.
Yeah, I don't think there's going to be – I mean, that team in the – a division in the NL could have three as well. The NL East is good, but I don't think – I think the Nationals are going to be dreadful. I think the Marlins are going to struggle to be a 500 team. I think the Mets are overrated, and the Phillies have had so many injuries. Bryce Harper is out until who knows
when. Reese Hoskins is out for the year, right?
It looks like he's going to be out for the year. Ranger Suarez, it looks like he's going to start the year on the IL as well. A little concerned about the bottom half of their rotation. I think the Phillies missed the playoffs. I think the Braves. Yeah.
That's a hot take.
Is it? I mean, they've had so many injuries. They're without
the reigning NL champs. They added Trey Turner just, you know, fast glance without knowing some of the details, you'd say Phillies are definitely a better playoff team.
I mean, I think they could contend for a wild card. They could potentially be a wild card. The injuries that they've had, they're missing two of their middle of the order guys. Harper until halfway through the year, he can come back quick. Hoskins is out for the entire season. Wheeler's somebody who has had trouble in the past staying healthy. And outside of Nola and Wheeler, who else impresses you with that rotation? Yeah, they added Taijuan Walker, but does Taijuan Walker scare you? Ranger Suarez is hurt. And the Phillies, like, they did have a pretty good bullpen last year, but they're going to need another really good year from that bullpen. I think the Braves run away with that division. I think the Braves win that division by double digit games.
I want to sleep on the Mets, though. They spent a lot of money.
I think they're lining up.
And they are older.
Too.
But when you have Verlander's rubber arm, even after Tommy John, and you've got Scherzer at the top of the rotation, those guys know, you know, that they're going to mow people down, and their lineup is very, very formidable. And they added, you know, they added guys to that lineup and spent money. I think the Mets and the Braves for sure are teams that I would think, and I agree with you on the injuries, but I think the Phillies are going to be a playoff team too.
I think the Braves are the best team in the National League by a mile.
The Padres.
I shouldn't have said a mile. Padres are really good too. I think The Braves are better than the Padres, but I think the Padres are really good. I think those are the two best teams in the National League. But to the American League West, I think the Astros make the playoffs. Near lock. I think Seattle is a near lock to make the playoffs as well. I have the Astros winning the West, but I have the Mariners being competitive the entire season. I think the Mariners are one of the best three teams in the American League. I think either the Angels and the Rangers are going to make the postseason too. Yeah, the Rangers spent money, like especially last offseason where they signed Trey Turner, they signed Marcus Semien to these huge deals. But this year was about adding quality starting pitchers to their pitching staff to where, yeah, Jacob deGrom is a huge, you know, question mark. How healthy is he going to be the entire season? But Martin Perez was really good last year. Eovaldi has really good stuff. He can be capable to be very good as well. John Gray, you get him out of Colorado. Can he be good? Andrew Heaney, he's been a solid pitcher as well. Like, the bottom of their rotation aren't a bunch of gas cans like it had been in the past. And they also signed Jake Overeasy. Now, he's going to start the year on the IL, it looks like. But Overeasy as your sixth starter isn't dreadful. The Angels, meanwhile, they used to be so stars and scrubs that's why they weren't very good, is because either Trout was getting hurt, or you had a bottom of the rotation that had ERAs north of 5, or you had dudes in the bottom of their order that had sub-220 batting averages. I think they did a really good job of filling the holes to where now they have a complete team. They had an offseason where instead of signing stars, they filled in the rest of their roster. I think both the Rangers and the Angels are going to be teams that are fighting for a 500 record, and one of them is going to get the last wild card spot. So I think the AL West is really good, and I think it's a good time. It's good timing for the Astros and really for the entire division that they're going with this flat schedule and not the unbalanced schedule of the past, where you were playing your division rivals more than any other team. The timing of it works out really well
as
for the Astros
where you
and the rest
cleaning
of the division.
Up year after year on a really weak division. This year, it looks like this division has completely flipped in terms of the talent, top to bottom. I mean, I look at what the Angels did with Anderson and Renfro. you know, you added a pitcher, you added a right fielder that's a plus on defense, but has a lot of pop in the lineup, and he's what Cole Calhoun couldn't do anymore. And so when you add him defensively, which Cole Calhoun was still a good defensive outfielder, but you add his pop at the plate to Mike Trout, you know, and you assume that Rendon is finally going to be healthy at third base, and they added quietly, again, like you said, some extra pitchers in the pen. I think the Angels are a team that are finally going to be a team that at least knocks on the door of what they were already supposed to be doing, which is becoming a playoff team and making some waves in the playoffs.
Apparently, I said that the Rangers signed Turner. I meant Corey Seager. They signed Corey Seager last year and Marcus Semien. Turner went to the Phillies, which they were talking about on Twitch earlier. Trey Turner was going to be the leadoff hitter for the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, he's going to be the leadoff hitter for the Philadelphia Phillies. There was an article today on MLB.com that were ranking the top 10 rotations in baseball. They had a rotation in the American League West better than the Astros rotation. Who was that team? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also, we make mock drafts great again on the Killer Bees. Mike Tannenbaum had a doozy earlier today on ESPN.com. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
8437, sorry, Branham, but that's a horrible take. Braves are really good, no doubt, but to say they are double-digit games better than the Mets is absurd. If it comes down to that at the end of the season, you're right, I'll be the first to admit it, but I have a very hard time believing that's how it will end up. Like, I don't believe in 40-year-old starting pitchers, so I don't really believe into the top of their rotation where Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander can maintain what they've been. If I'm wrong there, hey, I'm wrong. Justin Verlander has certainly proved that he can bounce back.
If you want something to support your argument, let's factor in the fact they lost their closer in the World Baseball Classic.
That's something that's a huge thing.
That's a big deal because that dude, you know, had his own theme song and game operations, you know, praise on social media, but he was a dude that closed the door, and now they don't have it anymore.
Look, if Verlander's as good as he was last year and Scherzer can stay healthy, unbelievable one, too. And Scherzer had a lot of injury concerns these last couple of years. Verlander, you're right. Can he pitch to a 1.75 ERA again? No. I mean, they're not asking him to, but can he be a 2.5 ERA guy? I have my druthers for a dude that's going to be approaching 40. The rest of that rotation, stop me whenever you're intimidated. David Peterson, Kodai Senga, who has never pitched a big league inning in his career, and Carlos Cookie Carrasco. The bottom half of that rotation is dreadful. Their lineup, like, they have some names. I'll give you that. Brandon Nimmo, who's always been an injury concern until he had a free agent year, by the way. No, he's a Giant. They didn't have a big acquisition.
They re-signed one of the two that were Mets.
They signed Nimmo.
Nimmo.
They signed Brandon Nimmo to be their, you know, to maintain their center field position. He's been good, but he's also been injury prone. Starling Marte's been injury prone. I like Lindor and Alonso. That's a really good middle of the rotation. Yep. But after that, Jeff McNeil, Mark Canha, Dan Vogelbach, Eduardo Escobar, Omar Narvaez. He's all right.
He's a 300 hitter, who? Right? McNeil,
I think last year was like flirted with 300, but I don't think he's a steady 300 hitter. And he has very little power.
Well, I'm not looking for power from him, but he's just got to set the table. They got a lot
he's
of pop
fifth.
In
that. He's hitting fifth. Okay. He had 9 homers last year. Now, last year he hit 326.
I'm not looking for power. I'm just looking for him to get on base. I think there's enough talent in the rest of that lineup that they can knock him in.
Yeah, I'm not buying the Mets stock, though. Anyways, MLB.com put together their top rotations in 2023. They had an American League West team with a better rotation, at least according to these experts, a better rotation than the Houston Astros. Can you name that one team? Do you want to take a guess on who the one team that they think has a better rotation than the Houston Astros?
The Seattle Mariners.
No. They did not have the Seattle Mariners in their top 10, actually. They had three AL West teams with the best rotations in their top 10.
They're not going
to
go Rangers.
One of them was Seattle. They have the Rangers.
Is that
they have
just because of DeGrom and Eovaldi?
They had the Rangers as the fourth best rotation in baseball in 2023. They have the Houston Astros at number 6. They have the actually number
oh, that's
7.
Ridiculous.
They have the Astros at 7. No, wait. They have the Astros at 8. And then they have the Angels at number 10. They write up on the Rangers as to why they had them here. No team upgraded a segment of its squad more than the Rangers. Last year Texas ranked starters ERA 25th in baseball. If health permits, huge if. The Rangers will rise up that list substantially.
That's ridiculous.
See, I like the rotation. I don't think it's the fourth best in baseball. I think it maybe is top 10. It might be 10th, but I don't have it number four.
It's much improved. Yeah, but I don't have him that high at all. And I think that's a stretch.
Like, I think it's deep. I think it's solid. But outside of DeGrom, and again, a huge if, next time he pitches over 150 innings will be the first time since when. But after DeGrom, you go Perez, Eovaldi, Gray, Heaney, Odorizzi. Like, who's your number two guy? Who's your number three guy? There's not a whole lot of quality there. Is it deep? Sure. But there's not a lot of quality.
Gray gets out of Colorado. Does that make him increasingly better? Eovaldi, what's he got left in the tank? I mean, Astros have had their success with him as well. They've added a lot of guys that have been there, done that, but, you know, can they do it at a level that puts them in the fourth best rotation slot in all of baseball? Yeah. I don't think so.
I like what they've done to the rotation. Being in the top five is really aggressive overreach.
With the double spend on the two shortstops, having Simeon play second, did that work out? No, I don't think so. But
Simeon had a bad year.
Yeah, but is it possible that they could get better this year? Sure. And DeGrom is a guy that everybody would love to have, but you're right. Injury concerns are always going to be at the forefront, and how many innings is he going to pitch? Now, they went and started to try and do the recycle route, and they got some veterans that have had some success in Major League Baseball before, but how many have anything left in the tank that's going to be substantial enough to put them as the fourth best rotation in baseball? We talked about the Dodgers don't have a bad rotation if Walker Buehler's healthy, but when you go back and you talk about the Mets.
Yeah, he's going to miss some time.
You talk about when you have Scherzer and Verlander at the top of any rotation, no matter who else you fill out the other three slots with, you're in a pretty good spot. But there's good rotations across baseball. The Braves, with their young arms, are all over the place. And you have to worry about, you know, the health of all the young arms and Strider and those guys. But that's a rotation that's on the top end to where I could sit there and keep going. The Astros obviously should be in that conversation for top five. Yeah, they lost Verlander, but they had a six-man rotation where everybody was doing their job a year ago, and there's nothing to think that any of these young guys are going away. I don't get it.
See, I would take
I think the Mariners too.
I would take the Astros fourth starter, and I understand that Brown's probably going to pitch your fifth day. I think Brown's more talented than Jose Urquidy. I love Jose Urquidy as a number four, number five starter, though. But I would take Hunter Brown, the Astros fourth best starter, over the Rangers second best starter.
I agree with that. I would agree with that, and I would also say that when you start, I think the Mariners rotation is better on paper, and no matter how else you want to analyze it, with the Rangers. I mean, Robbie Ray got lit up in the playoffs, but Robbie Ray was a Cy Young Award winner 2 years ago. You look at Kirby.
They're not even in the top 10.
And you look at the two trades they made, the Mariners should be in the top 10.
Yeah, they're better. I think they might have the best rotation in the AL, the AL West. Now,
possible.
I think I would have the Astros slightly ahead of the Mariners, but if you told me that there was one AL West team that somebody had ranked ahead of the Astros, I would guess the Mariners every single time. Every single time. I wouldn't guess the Rangers.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Patrick Creighton, who lives in our Twitch, Rangers is fourth best rotation in MLB. Ha, 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 bunch of capital letters. Coug Blaze, I take Mariners over Rangers, who wrote these rankings. The experts at MLB.com. Coug Blaze, Rangers have a bullpen, if that's what they are talking about. It's not as good a bullpen as the Astros, to be honest with you. And They weren't talking about bullpens. They were talking only about the starting rotations, which is kind of crazy to consider. The Rangers having the fourth best starting rotation in all of baseball. Are they improved? Yeah, they're much improved. This wasn't who improved the most. It was who is the best, which teams have the best rotations in baseball, and they listed the Mets. Some of the other teams that were on this list, top 10 rotations in 2023, they actually had the Mets number one, with Scherzer and Verlander at the top. After that, anybody scare you? I don't really think it does. Number two, they had the Brewers, which I know you're a big fan of the Brewers.
Look, the Brewers aren't going to be able to pay all those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So if they start the season with all those guys, I would bet one, if not more, of them are traded before the trade deadline.
That would be interesting. They could fall apart, huh? Burns and Woodruff up top. Peralta's really good, too. Bottom of their rotation, Lohr, Miley, Hauser, whoever's in the mix there. Braves, really good up top. Fried, Strider. Wright's going to start the year on the IL. Morton, who's always kind of hurt. Schuster, Soroka. Rangers, we just mentioned them fourth. And then rounding out their top five is the Phillies. With Wheeler, Nola up top, Ranger Suarez, who's going to start the year on the IL, Taijuan Walker, Bailey Falter, Andrew Painter. All right, so we've been making mock drafts great again with the Killer Bees. We'll take a look at a little bit of this from Mike Tannenbaum. Mike Tannenbaum, he had an interesting wrinkle to his mock drafts, though. This isn't a Kiper mock. This isn't a Todd McShay mock. I think Lance Zierlein, like, trusts his eyes more than he trusts reports. I think Lance looks at, like, mocks based on how he views players from a scouting perspective, from a scout's point of view. Whereas Todd McShay and I think Mel Kiper and most of the people that do mock drafts, they kind of read the tea leaves. They're trying to, like, hear what's going on around the NFL. They try to talk to GMs, try to talk to scouts, and have some sort of understanding. Mike Tannenbaum put himself in the shoes of every general manager for every team that was making a pick. So Tannenbaum's very clear that this isn't like your traditional mock draft. This is me as an NFL general manager looking at every single one of these picks and putting myself in the shoes of the general manager for that organization, which I like that. And Mike Tannenbaum's a huge fan of the Killer Bees. He's a friend of the show. He loves coming on with us. He's so excited.
He's hyper-talkative.
So excited when he comes on the Killer Bees. At number one, this isn't going to make a whole lot of Texans fans happy, I don't think. He has, being the general manager of the Carolina Panthers, he says that he would take, at number one, Bryce Young, quarterback from Alabama.
It's interesting. It's not what we've been hearing. It's not what the rumor mill has been churning in terms of the two guys they're interested, Richardson and Stroud. I would be very, very surprised if this is the direction they were going. But again, like we talked about, the smoke screens and the way they oogled over C.J. Stroud's workout and then how everything was being hyper-analyzed, they're not telling anybody how they truly feel. But I would be surprised if that's the direction they went and they traded up to get Bryce Young. But I also think that there's enough camps out there that'll tell you that they made the smart move and that was the right thing to do, because the way a general manager would break down the pros and the cons, there's a whole lot to be excited about with Bryce Young, and the cons are his height and his weight.
Yeah, keep in mind, this is Tannenbaum saying what he would do in those spots.
Right.
So this isn't him reporting on, like, what he's hearing from Carolina or what he thinks is going to happen. Like, this is him. If he was the general manager, he would take Bryce Young because he thinks Bryce Young is the best quarterback in this draft. So if Bryce Young is off the board, what do y'all do at number two?
You go C.J. Stroud.
You're unanimous on that. I don't want Stroud at number two. I like the idea of a trade down. I like the idea of a Will Anderson way more than I like C.J. Stroud. I think C.J. Stroud had a very comfortable living as a college quarterback in college. He had an offensive line that gave him more time than anybody else. He rarely saw any pressure. He had great receivers to throw to every single game. I am very curious what C.J. Stroud looks like with some adversity, what C.J. Stroud looks like against maybe subpar protection from an NFL standard. And people love to look at the Georgia game. He wasn't really pressured a whole lot in that Georgia game either. His offensive line did a good job. Now, I understand that Georgia defense is very good. But Mike Tannenbaum does have the Houston Texans selecting C.J. Stroud at number two. You think Texans fans are cool with that? Like, Texans fans are cool with sticking and picking at number two? If Bryce Young goes one, they're totally okay with C.J. Stroud at number two?
Everything you just said, which is valid. The reasons why I think the Texans still go Stroud is, and with Nick Caserio's butt getting on the hot seat, is because that's what they're supposed to do. The tier one were two guys. And if you get one of those two guys, then you did what you were supposed to do. You're not going to catch as much scrutiny. You're not going to catch as much heat. You're not going to catch as much of the blame.
I don't want a GM to think along those
lines. I understand that, but you know that guys are looking at and thinking about their livelihood, and they're thinking about a lot of things. And you hope all of it is centered around making the franchise better. Some of them are obviously, for selfish reasons, going to think about themselves too. That's why they take Stroud.
Yeah, Stroud's the safe pick. There's no doubt about that. That Stroud would be the less, like, no one would have the scrutiny of the Texans taking C.J. Stroud as opposed to Will Anderson. What are y'all doing? We need a quarterback. Trading down. What are you doing? We need a quarterback. Or one of those other quarterbacks. What are you doing? C.J. Stroud is the safe pick. 713-780-ESPN. You content with Stroud at two if Young's number one. 713-780-3776. We'll continue looking at this Tannenbaum mock, looking at it from a GM's perspective as we make mock drafts great again. What does he have the Houston Texans doing later in the draft? What does he have him doing at number 12? And we'll put ourselves in the shoes of a general manager as well. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's our spoiler segment. We'll get to the Mike Tannenbaum making mock drafts great again in a little bit. Yesterday, we talked about D'Amico Ryans, talking about him, talking about short quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. And we said this is what the wheelhouse is going to lead with. We nailed it. We nailed it. That is exactly what the Will House led with. Let's spoil it today. Today's tough. Today, it's like there's not a guaranteed lead-in to that show. Or is there?
There is.
You think so?
Oh, there is.
What is it?
Who's the biggest Jets fan on the planet?
Is Jake going to be here today?
I think he's
he
back
wasn't
today.
Here yesterday.
I know, but I think he's back today.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
How do you know that?
I'm just guessing.
I don't think they're going to lead with the Jets.
Okay.
What are they going to lead with?
The fact that now the general manager of the Packers has spoken, and what's the true holdup in the real story with his Jets that he's just oogling about, that he's tweeting about, we'll give you one of our receivers, that'll get the deal done, because now he's Mike Tannenbaum.
I don't think there's any chance.
No, I don't think you lead with it, but it's coming up.
What does the Will House lead with today? 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Opening day's 2 days away. There wasn't, like, no one talked at the... the owners' meetings, anything like that. Maybe they can recycle some D'Amico sound. You think they would lead with baseball?
No. There's nothing. What's the lead story in baseball?
Where'd Joe go? Where'd Joe George go? Joe just walked out again. I was going to try to get Joe's input.
He thought there were honey buns in the kitchen.
B. Hannon says Robert Woods talk. There's nothing new with Robert Woods. CBS listed Robert Woods as one of the worst five contracts in this NFL offseason, which I disagree with. We disagreed with that yesterday. I'm stumped. Usually that's Joe. I'm stumped on what the Will House is going to lead with today. I really am.
Yeah, I don't even – there's nothing other – the big NFL stories are Lamar and Rodgers still, and the only new news is the fact that you know, Gutekunst and LaFleur were out there talking about Jordan Love, and Gutekunst was basically selling out Rodgers, saying that he didn't return any phone calls, so they couldn't have any – conversations about truly what the direction was going to be.
They don't lead with NFL very often, though. That's usually their...
Lead with Tannenbaum's mock draft.
Maybe. That would be kind of reachy, I think.
I don't know.
Maybe.
That's substantial enough because he basically just... Because, you know, Cody's a Bryce Young guy.
Yeah.
And Tannenbaum puts Bryce Young at the top of the list. So I think that there's a legit possibility that...
Maybe. I think it's on the board. I think I would have it as a top three favorite. People on the Twitch channel are saying that they're going to lead with D'Amico. I think there's an outside chance.
They did yesterday, didn't they?
They used D'Amico's sound. Okay. I think there's an outside chance that maybe they lead D'Amico with what other coaches at the NFL owners' meetings are saying about D'Amico.
I think that what they might lead with is how much of a smokescreen guys put out there in the media during this time of the year.
This is
both coaches and GMs.
Dab King says D'Amico bringing up Bryce Young's athleticism. Fake Tony Stark says, will they lead with the Rockets? Maybe the XFL.
Do you lead with the Rockets? No one knew they played last night, and they were pissed off when they found out the only way they knew they were playing is because they wanted to see the Astros game and realized that the Astros were on the alternate back channel for AT&T Sportsnet.
I think we might be driving up the ratings at the opening segment of the Will House by playing this game, by playing our spoiler last segment
game.
Don't
you tell me all the time that's a daily occurrence.
I don't know. I don't think I said that. You're putting words in my mouth.
I'm not.
PC says Tannenbaum. Look, that might be it. Maybe that is it. Maybe they go with the Tannenbaum. Let's finish up the Tannenbaum mock draft.
Let's do our exercise.
It's our exercise that we did yesterday. We nailed it yesterday. Yep. We were all over it yesterday. Some days will be easier than others. Like today, I think, is a very difficult day. Anyways, Mike Tannenbaum, looking at this from a GM's point of view, every single team that's picking, he puts himself in the shoes of the GM and what he would do as the GM of that team. He had Carolina going Bryce Young at 1. He had the Texans selecting C.J. Stroud at 2. Will Anderson off the board at 3 to Arizona. Will Levis, number 4 to Indy. So Mike Tannenbaum, Levis fan, likes him at number 4 to Indy. He had Seattle. This is the curveball here. He had the Seattle Seahawks selecting a quarterback out of the SEC.
Richardson.
Hendon Hooker.
That high?
He had Hendon. Again, this is Mike Tannenbaum not looking at reports, not like gauging the interest of general managers or executives. This is Tannenbaum, what he would do from a GM's perspective. He would take Hendon Hooker at number 5 to Seattle. That's why he's no longer a general manager.
Yeah, really.
It's pretty high for Hendon Hooker, but he loves Hendon Hooker. Tyree Wilson to Detroit, Christian Gonzalez to Las Vegas, Miles Murphy to Atlanta, Skoronski to Chicago, and then Broderick Jones, the tackle, to Philadelphia. He has Anthony Richardson coming off the board at number 11 to the Tennessee Titans. I think the Titans are a team that could be going quarterback. And at number 12 for the Houston Texans, as the general manager, he has the Texans going with Quentin Johnson, the wide receiver from TCU.
See, I want him to take wide receiver. The more that we did deeper dives into the receiver class, and then even starting with Lance, who was the first that I heard start talking about that there was concerns about his hands. I understand that I've always said I want them to go receiver, and I'm fine with it. I think I might want him to go with a different wide receiver, but I get it that if you're going to draft quarterback at 2, then you're going to get him weapons, in my opinion, at 12. And that I know you and I differ a little bit on that, but I would definitely take wide receiver there. If it's Quentin Johnston in this draft for the sake of the exercise, okay.
Yeah, with this exercise, I'm not a Quentin Johnston guy. You're right. I don't like receiver at 12, period. If you're committed to draft a receiver in the first round, I want to trade back from 12 to like the late teens and collect a little bit more draft capital, take a receiver there. My favorite receiver might be Zay Flowers, actually, from Boston College. I love
him. Talking a lot
now, he's
about
small.
Him for a while.
He's small, but I love Zay Flowers. But Mike Tannenbaum, we've been playing the exercise where we put our feet in the shoes of the general manager. We have the option from 12, 13, 14, 15 to who we would select. I'll be honest with you up front. This is my least favorite quadrant multiple choice that we've had.
That's impressive because you said that yesterday.
I did say that yesterday. This one's worse.
Yeah, but this one's far worse. This one doesn't change positions.
That's the thing. You're drafting either a wide receiver or a tackle. And I love tackles. Everybody knows I love offensive linemen, especially really big ones that go to my alma mater. You go Cougs. But I don't want the Houston Texans to take a tackle. They have Laramie Tunsil. They locked him up. Most money in ever given to a left tackle. They have Tytus Howard. They don't need a tackle. Mike Tannenbaum has Quentin Johnston going to number 12 to the Texans. Paris Johnson, the tackle from Ohio State, going 13 to the Jets. Darnell Wright, which is an interesting name at 14, the tackle from Tennessee, going to the Patriots. And then at 15, he has DeJuan Jones, another tackle from Ohio State. What does that say about C.J. Stroud? Going number 15 to Green Bay. So if you're Nick Caserio and we play our multiple choice, you have one to take any four of those guys. Is it Quentin Johnston? Is it Paris Johnston? Is it Darnell Wright? Is it DeJuan Jones? I don't need a tackle. I need a wide receiver more than a tackle. Even me, who's anti-receiver at 12, trade down if you need a receiver in the first round, I have no choice
but
to take Quentin Johnston.
That's
at number 12.
Look, and I am a Jordan Addison guy.
You don't like Johnston.
But I don't like him that high.
Yeah, I like Addison too.
Yeah, but I don't like the choices that I have here because I know that the Texans aren't going offensive line when they've locked up Tunsil, and I believe they're going to make an offer to keep Howard. I don't think that this is the move for the Texans. So I think that if all he gives us is an offensive lineman and one receiver, it's easy for me to say I agree with the pick because I think that with the choices given to us, wide receiver is the only answer here.
Yeah. Joe George, any way that you can talk us out of wide
receiver?
I'm
creatively trying to think of like how you do this, but there's no answer.
Unless you're committed to move Tytus Howard to guard.
No, you can't. Center.
Because you've got Shaq
and you've got
Kenyon Green, who you're not going to walk away from at left guard.
Like, so like, the center of that group would be Kenyon Green. Kenyon Green had his hand on the ball a little bit at A&M. If you were going to move one of those guys,
I'll tell you what, big picture, for the offseason, that's a more interesting conversation.
If you felt,
is it too soon to think about moving him to center?
No, I
would say yes, but if
I would
you had
say yes
to
as
between
well,
him
but
and Tytus,
they haven't done anything else to find a center.
In this scenario, if you're going to make me make a decision between Quentin Johnston and moving Kenyon Green to center, Tytus Howard to left guard, then I'm probably drafting Paris Johnston.
And then just playing Johnston at tackle, and then you're rearranging Tytus Howard
to
left guard, you're moving Kenyon Green to center. But you hate Quentin Johnston.
I don't hate him.
But you have to pick one of these four dudes.
He's my least favorite wide receiver.
I'm not saying as a person. As a prospect, you don't like Quentin Johnston as a prospect. He's my wide receiver.
He's my least favorite wide receiver.
We're not going Todd McShay on you. You didn't question his character.
Todd McShay might have been right. So.
So you would go with Paris Johnston and just move the offensive line?
I guess.
I'm not a fan of Quentin Johnston either. Like, give me a receiver who has good hands.
Are you going to pay you think they're going to pay Tytus?
Well, that's a good call. That's a good call.
So then you can move on from Tytus, get your
right
tackle now.
They have to decide by May. Is that right?
You can always sign the extension. You're thinking of the fifth-year player option. They picked that up last year.
Can I get a second rounder for Tytus Howard?
I think somebody might give you one.
Probably not in the contract year. Unless the deal was worked out whenever you trade him.
I'll take Quentin Johnston.
I think you have to take Quentin Johnston here. Thanks, Mike Tannenbaum, for the worst multiple choice we've had at making mock drafts great again.
Can't wait to have you back on the show.
8596 says the Wheelhouse is going to lead with Space Cowboys at Minute Maid. Jason says they're going to lead with Enrique Iglesias.
Or Iglesias.
Iglesias. All right, that's going to do it for us. Thanks to Joe George, assistant to the regional manager, doing all the hard work. For Blank, I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.